I'm happy to welcome Rick Edelman back to the show this afternoon. I've known Rick for several years. I consider him to be one of the experts in this country when it comes to personal finance. His company, Edelman Financial Services, manages billions of dollars for consumers all across the country. They've won dozens and dozens and dozens of awards. But more importantly, Rick wrote a book in the late 90s that I consider to be the Bible of personal finance. I have recommended this book to so many people. I have given copies of this book to so many people. It's called The Truth About Money. He revised it a couple of years ago, came out with a second edition, updated it, and that was even better than the first. Now he has come up with, I guess, a sequel to that. It's called The Lies About Money. And he's here to talk about it this afternoon on KMOX. Rick, good to have you back on the show.
Always a thrill, Paul.
The Dow finished today up 120 more points. It's over the 14,000 mark. And I see a story in one of the papers today that is the fifth anniversary of the bull market. Should the average American care?
No. No, put it in a nutshell, no. Yeah, because tomorrow's headline will probably be the opposite. Oh, my goodness, the Dow lost 200 points. We're no longer above 14,000, and woe is me. This isn't something to be terribly excited about. You shouldn't really be paying a lot of attention to the daily market gyration. It's not terribly relevant to your life.
So glad to hear you say that, because there's way too much pressure on the other end, and you're the only voice of reason on that side of the fence, and that's why I'm happy to call you a friend.
Well, you know, it's because everybody in my business, we make a living by telling you it matters, by telling you to pay attention now. You
right.
Check the value of your accounts on an hourly basis and trade, 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 buy, sell. And all it does is help people like me stay in business. I mean, it's not in your best interest to pay attention to the daily gyrations of the market. I mean, the best analogy I can give you is a farmer. You know, a farmer plants a seed in the ground. Can you imagine if he went back the next day to dig it up to see how it's doing? I mean, that's what Wall Street wants you to do. They want you to buy an investment today and check with it hourly
to
see how it's doing.
Well, right.
That's nuts. You're planning for your retirement, which is 30 years away, 20 years away. You're trying to get your kid into college in the next 5 or 10 years. These are long-term goals, and therefore what's happening on the daily basis is really not helping you. It reminds me of people who go to the beach, and they get so overwhelmed by the action of the waves that they're mesmerized. What they fail to remember is that the waves have absolutely no impact on the tide. And we need to remember that it's the tide that counts. That's what's determining the long-term impact on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to keep that in mind with our investments.
And also, those waves have been coming for a long, long time, and they're going to keep coming for a long, long time.
Whether you watch it or not every hour.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I remember as a little kid, the first time I went down to the beach when my parents took me there, and at night we're walking along the boardwalk, and the waves were still coming. And I actually said to my mother, she reminded me of this. I was like 5 years old, and I said, Mom, I thought they turned the ocean off at night. And people have to remember with investing, it's the same thing. They never turn it off.
Right.
So you'll drive yourself nuts watching it. And more importantly, if you do watch it on a daily basis, it'll just entice you to do something about it. If the market's rising, you're going to want to buy. The news of today with the Dow hitting its all-time high is going to encourage a lot of people to put money in the market, meaning they're buying at its high. And if the market goes down, then they're going to get upset and scared, and they're going to want to sell it when it's low, and then they're going to wonder, how come I never make any money when investing?
Yeah. On the other hand, there are going to be people who are going to say, every time the market goes up 120 points, well, I was an idiot. I should have invested yesterday or the day before that or the day before that. I've obviously missed something, and I certainly don't want to start now when it's at its all-time high. And those people would be wrong too, wouldn't they?
They absolutely would, because they're going to sit on the sidelines forever. I mean, let's go back to October of 1987, 20 years ago. Do we remember what happened?
Black Monday, I think.
Absolutely. It was the worst one day in Wall Street history. The Dow went from 2,700 to about 1,900, and everybody was, you know, going crazy. There was an awful lot of selling as the panic was setting in. But we have to remember, at 20 years ago, the Dow was at 2,700 and fell to 1,700. Today, it's at 14,000. In other words, did what happened then have any impact on you today? The same thing will happen 20 years from now. So if you're looking at the value of the market and asking yourself the question, the classic question all investors ask, should I stay out and watch it go up, or should I get in and make it go down? That's the question we all ask ourselves.
Yeah.
You have to understand it's a dumb question. It's not the right question. You have to recognize that 10, 20 years from now, of course the markets will be higher than they are today. They've always been higher over 10 and 20-year periods. So focus on that instead of tomorrow.
Talking with Rick Edelman, his new book is called The Lies About Money, another terrific personal finance book that I think should be on your bookshelf. And more importantly, before you put it on the bookshelf, you should read and get this insight. And I got to tell you, Rick, and again, I've known you for several years, so I got to ask you this. You sound angry in the book, particularly about the mutual fund industry. Are you angry?
Yeah, I am. And I actually...
You used to be a giant proponent of mutual funds.
I know. And I guess maybe I'm like, you know, a scorned spouse that's contributing to it. I, as you know, have been doing this for over 20 years. We're one of the largest mutual fund investors in the country. We've managed billions, over $3.5 billion for ordinary consumers. Ordinary. We don't deal with high net worth, ultra high net worth rich people and institutions. We deal with ordinary moms and pops, working people of America. And we have been managing more money for more clients than anyone else in the nation. And for 20 plus years, we've been putting all that money into retail mutual funds and doing it successfully on behalf of our clients. Well, over the last several years, there has been a major scandal in the retail mutual fund world. Unbelievable revelations have come about showing that the retail mutual fund world is no longer operating the way that it once did. They have radically and dramatically changed their business practices where they are no longer focusing on the benefit to the shareholder. In other words, they're no longer doing business that benefits you and me. They are now doing business in a manner that benefits themselves and at our expense. Today's mutual fund investors are taking greater risks than they realize. They're paying much higher fees than they realize, and they're earning lower returns than they realize, all because of the deceptive business practices that the fund world is engaging in. I identify 25 separate deceptive business practices in my book. Several of them are not merely deceptive, they're downright illegal. Over the last 4 years, there have been over $5 billion in fines. Dozens of mutual fund executives have been kicked out of the industry, and many more are in prison. And many consumers are unaware of what's going on, and as a result, their financial future is in jeopardy because they don't realize what's going on with their investments.
Now, this affects a lot of people, even people who may not consider themselves investors, but even if they've got a 401k and those choices are this mutual fund or that mutual fund or this index fund or that other thing, those various investments all probably come under the heading of what you're talking about, don't they?
Very much so. And this affects, you know, mutual funds right now are owned by half of all U.S. households. It's ubiquitous. Virtually everybody owns mutual funds these days, and we are relying on them to save for our kids' college education, enabling us to save for retirement and our 401ks and 403bs, and care for aging parents as well. And it's shocking what's going on in the industry. And so the first half of the book lays out the revelations of what's going on in the retail mutual fund world. How did we get here? Why are they doing it the way they're doing it? And then the second half of the book, most importantly, shows you how you can fix it. And that's the really good news about it, Paul, is that there is a simple, quick, easy solution that's extremely effective that gets you away from all these problems, lowers your investing costs, lowers your risks, and improves your returns. And my message is trying to get the word out so people can take advantage of this.
Are you saying that all mutual fund companies are corrupt?
Virtually every major retail mutual fund organization has been implicated in the scandal in one way or another. And in the book, I name names. I specifically show you what individual mutual fund companies are doing. Every big name fund organization you know of has been implicated in this scandal. And it is so broad, it is astonishing. It is normal business practice in the mutual fund industry, and it's astonishing.
Now, what about people who are using mutual fund companies like, I'll just pick Vanguard because they're the ones who are kind of the leaders in this, people who just are using them to invest in index funds, whether it's an S&P 500 index fund or a total stock market index fund or the various other index funds that are available through not just Vanguard, but many more of these mutual fund companies where there isn't necessarily an active person who's picking stocks for you, but they're taking your money and pooling it with the others and investing it in the 500 stocks of the S&P 500. Is that a safe investment?
It's an improvement. It's really ironic that for so many years there has been a debate between active funds and index funds. And I have historically, as you well know, been on the active camp, are arguing that active funds can in fact be better investments. I have now abandoned that idea because of the revelations of the business practices of these money managers. And that doesn't mean, however, that we move toward the index side. Indexing, pure and simple, is a flawed investment strategy. Merely buying a fund that replicates the S&P 500 stock index has severe drawbacks that I detail not only in this book but in my prior book, The Truth About Money. So there has to be a better answer to that, and I reveal it in the book. It's a new generation of mutual funds. It's not all that new. They've been around since 1991 and 1993, so they've been around a long, long time, but most people are not familiar with it. There are two categories. One are institutional mutual funds, which are operating very different from retail funds, and second, exchange-traded funds, which some people have begun to hear about. These two variations of the mutual fund world solve the problem for us. They are extremely inexpensive. They eliminate this manager-based investment strategy that enable you to own a wide variety of investments. The diversification gives you an awful lot of safety. And it solves the debate between active investing and index investing. So I lay out in the book very clearly exactly how institutional funds operate as well as exchange-traded funds.
All right. Now, let's go back to the person who has a 401k at work. And, you know, they're trying to save as much money as they can for retirement, but they don't really pay attention to what's happening. Even you're advising, once you're investing, don't look at the market every day. So they haven't been doing that. They've been putting away their $25 a week or $50 a week out of their paycheck, whatever they could afford to put away. And that money is going away and they're saving it. And they chose from that multiple choice list that they got from their employer about which of the 13 different funds. They chose one they thought was right. And now what are they supposed to do?
Well, you obviously are limited in your 401k to the choices the plan offers. So I have a short-term solution and a long-term one. The long-term solution is to lobby your boss, to bring the situation to your boss's awareness and encourage your boss to offer exchange-traded funds and institutional funds to the retirement plan. Eventually, over the next 10 years, every 401k in the country will do this. There's no question about it. ETFs are fast becoming the biggest power in the mutual fund world, and they are going, without any question, they're going to overtake the retail fund environment, which is an outdated, outmoded, antiquated way of managing money. ETFs are the wave of the future, so you need to encourage your boss to get with the new technology, get with the new opportunity, and offer it in your plan. But until your boss does that, continue to participate in your 401k to the maximum you can. I have a complete chapter on how best to invest in your 401k. Most employees are handling their 401k the wrong way, and you're choosing the wrong investments. And because of that, you're going to cost yourself hundreds of thousands of dollars between now and your retirement. So by showing you the right way to handle the choices in your plan, given the limitations you've got, you can still make a huge difference in the amount of money you collect between now and retirement.
You and Jean, your wife, have a lot of money that was invested in mutual funds because you were promoting them for all of those years, thinking it was the way that people should go.
Right.
Have you taken all of that money out? And if so, weren't there tax implications?
Yes and yes. Jean and I built our financial planning practice on the premise that we were looking for our own solution to manage our money for ourselves, and then we built our firm to share that information with others. And that's what we've done forever. We've always owned the very same investments that we recommend to our clients. So when we realized what was going on in the scandal, we realized that mutual funds were no longer acceptable, we sold them all. We were the first to do so in our planning practice, and then we went about explaining to our clients what we've done and why and encouraging them to follow, which they all have done. And there were some tax implications that we incurred when we sold those investments. But guess what? You're going to incur those taxes sooner or later. You can only defer them. You can't avoid them. So failing to make the move that you need to make merely because you don't want to pay taxes today is very short-sighted. You're much better doing what you need to do. Do it when you need to do it. Do what's in your best interest. And recognize that taxes are a byproduct of successful investing. It's only people who have profits that pay the taxes. So remember, taxes are a good thing.
Rick Edelman's new book is called The Lies About Money, Achieving Financial Security and True Wealth by Avoiding the Lies Others Tell Us and the Lies We Tell Ourselves. Rick runs a financial services company that has billions of dollars in investments that they manage for consumers like you all across the country, and also has a national radio show that's based at WMAL in Washington, D.C., my old stomping grounds, which is where we met. On that show, he takes a lot of phone calls, and so we're going to do that here this afternoon at 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. Mike, you're on KMOX. Say hi to Rick.
Hi, Rick.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. You know, I bought a company, Portland General, back in 1993, and it gradually became Exxon. My cost basis was 13 a share, and when Enron got around 80-something, and then it dropped off into the 70s, you could kind of see the train coming down the track. And I know I wasn't very astute at all in these things. So how come everybody else lost their shirts?
Well, I think everybody lost their shirts. It's really interesting. Many of the people who lost their shirts, not only in Enron, but in the dot-com mania that occurred in the late 1990s,
uh-huh.
is because they were guilty of buying high and selling low. What happened was, if you look at the statistics, you'll see that most of the money that was invested in those high-flying dot-coms, those tech stocks of the 90s, most of the money was invested not in 94, 95, when those stocks first got started, but in 98, 99, after they had already made a lot of money. In other words, people love to buy a winner. Nobody loves to buy a stock that's unproven or unheard of. They want to know that it's already done well before they buy it. And, of course, by then it's too late. And when those stocks, which they bought high, start to falter, people then sell out of panic. Or, in the case of companies like Enron, those who didn't sell got completely wiped out when the company went bankrupt. So it's a wonderful example of how to do it wrong. And in my book, The Lies About Money, I lay out the correct strategy of how to do it right, and I'll tell you what it is. It's really quite simple. Instead of trying to pick individual stocks, because that is something that most of us mere mortals have no idea how to do it. We don't know when to do it. We don't know when to get in or when to get out. Instead of picking individual stocks, let's build an overall portfolio that is diversified. In other words, in our view, it's not about deciding what stock to buy. The question is, how much of our money should we place into stocks in the first place, as opposed to bonds, government securities, real estate, international securities, oil and gas, precious metals, natural resources and commodities. We have to recognize that the market is really about 20 markets, and it's not a question of choosing which one to go into or deciding am I in or am I out, but how you allocate your money among all of those asset classes.
And what do you think of Franklin Templeton? You mentioned mutual funds, just offhand.
Well, Franklin Templeton is one of the largest mutual fund companies in America. Ironically, you would have made a lot more money buying their stock than by buying their stock mutual funds, which is yet another example of how they are in business for their own benefit as opposed to the benefit of their shareholders. There have been a number of examples that I lay out in the book of how they have had their role in the mutual fund scandal over the past several years. They are, like I said, one of the biggest retail mutual fund companies in America and engaged in many of the common routine business practices that I lash out about in the book. You know, it's really interesting, Paul. I'm quickly discovering that my book, The Lies About Money, ought to have a title of the book they don't want you to read,
mm-hmm.
Because it's not a real popular book in financial circles, and we're already beginning to see a lot of blogs and web postings and other notions by people in the industry who are lashing out at me.
Oh, they're coming after you, are they?
Oh, yeah. They're not saying anything factual because I have the facts on my side, so they're levying personal attacks, and it's because they're upset and worried that I am saying, I'm revealing to consumers what's really going on.
Very, very interesting. All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Rick, you mentioned, before I take the next call, you mentioned government securities and bonds and real estate and precious metals and other investments. I don't know anything about any of those, so what am I supposed to do?
Here's the good news. You don't have to know anything about any of those. We're still using mutual funds to obtain them, but we're not using the retail scandal-filled mutual funds. We're using institutional shares and exchange-traded funds. And so you don't have to become an expert in this. All you have to decide is, how much of my money belongs in real estate funds versus stock funds? And in fact, in the world of stocks, how much of my money belongs in large cap or versus mid cap or small cap, growth versus value, U.S. versus international? These are difficult questions themselves. And in my book, I solve it for you. I offer in the book 43 model portfolios, and it's in a full-color insert. I had a big fight with my publisher to get him to do that.
Yeah.
It looks really cool, doesn't it?
Very nice, yes.
And there are 43 model portfolios that show you the wide variety of ways you can build your own assets. The problem is then, okay, which of the 43 is right for me? So I created a guide. It takes about 5 minutes. It's a lot of fun. You answer 8 or 9 questions, and it tells you exactly which of those 43 portfolios is right for you, so that then you know exactly how your asset allocation ought to be, and you're now ready to go. You say, okay, 10% of my money belongs in real estate. You go pick a real estate fund from the list available at exchange-traded funds or international shares, and it's very simple, very easy. Anyone can do it. It doesn't take a lot of money, doesn't take a lot of time, and doesn't take a lot of expertise.
Rick's book is called The Lies About Money. If you'd like to get a copy, use the link on KMOX.com to the KMOX St. Louis Children's Hospital bookstore, because that way you'll order the book from Amazon through that link. Amazon will send you the book as quickly as they possibly can, and a portion of the proceeds will go to help out Children's Hospital here in St. Louis.
We'll you'll also find out at Amazon.com some of the guys who are levying personal attacks.
Oh, is that where they're jumping on you in that personal review section?
They're doing some of it there, and there are some other websites as well where they're coming out of the It's kind of funny. Some of them are downright hysterical. One guy actually wrote, he said, Edelman has no credibility except for his success. I was like, hello?
Yeah.
What?
Listen, Rick, if you're going to have the facts on your side, you're not going to win any arguments on the blogosphere.
I know. It's so fun to read this stuff.
Rick is the guy who years ago shocked you on this show by telling you to never pay off your house, to always keep as big a mortgage as you can. Now he's saying get rid of those mutual funds. The industry has changed, and you're actually losing money to a corrupt institution in many cases when you're dealing with mutual fund companies. He has better ideas in his book, and we're going to go back to your phone calls and talk about those a little bit more with Ron. You're next on KMOX. Say hi to Rick.
Hi, Rick.
How are you, sir?
Just fine, thank you. I have some 529 plans for my grandchildren, and it seems like the only choice is your popular brand name mutual funds. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, actually, there is one 529 plan in West Virginia that uses institutional shares. It's available to anybody of any state. However, if you were to purchase it, you would not get a state tax deduction, being a Missouri resident. However, it is institutional shares and available to everyone in the country. It is interesting to note that I do have a chapter in the book on college savings, and yes, you're doing the right thing. 529s are, without a doubt, the best way to save for college. However, interestingly, I argue that I'm not so sure that grandparents ought to be saving for those grandkids' college educations. And there's a kind of a bizarre reason why I say this. I've been counseling individuals and families for more than 20 years, and we've seen it all. And I can tell you that we've seen a large number of examples where grandparents set money aside for young grandchildren in a 529 plan or some other vehicle. And by the time the kid gets to college at age 18, the grandparent realizes they haven't seen this kid in 12 years due to divorce. Or the child decides not to go to college. Or the child wins a scholarship and doesn't need the money to go to college. Or the grandparent themselves discover that they've got their own health issues and they need the money for their own medical expenses. So for lots of different family reasons, we have reached the conclusion that it's in many cases best for the grandparent not to be saving for the grandkids' college education.
Not all, but some.
Just some, yes. And I'm also not being really mean about this or harsh. Parents everywhere are freaking out right now. Here's my reasoning. When the kid goes to college at age 18, you just start writing checks at that time. Because you can write unlimited checks, unlimited amounts, directly to the institution. So there's no particular need for you to set money aside in an account where you may regret having done so. That's very different for mom and dad, but you're the grandparent. Now, keep in mind that if you do what I'm suggesting, you will give away some of the tax advantage. The big benefit of a 529 is that the money grows tax-free. If you don't fund the 529, you give away that tax-free benefit. So I simply offer it as food for thought, something for you to consider and evaluate, partly based on your own family dynamics. If you know that your son or daughter-in-law is, someone who's likely not going to be in the family for long, you might want to think twice about funding a grandchild's account.
All right, Ron, thank you very much for calling. Rick's book is The Lies About Money. Give me 30 seconds on this. The baby boomers start retiring next year. What's the impact of that going to be on all of us?
None. And I'm glad you asked. I hear so often on my own radio show people asking the question that they hear this story that, hey, when the baby boomers retire, they're going to cause the stock market to crash. That's nonsense. That's not going to happen. The so-called age wave is a myth designed by people trying to sell books and scare you into buying weird investments. Don't worry about the boomers retiring. It will have no adverse impact on our future.
Want to read a great book? First, get Rick's new book, The Lies About Money, and then immediately after that, go to the link I'm sure is right below it to get his other book, The Truth About Money, and those two will pretty much teach you everything you need to know about personal finance, although Rick doesn't want you to know everything there is because he still needs clients. It's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Paul.
Rick Edelman, that's Rick with no K at the end. R-I-C is Rick. Edelman is E-D-E-L-M-A-N. Use the link on KMOX.com to buy the book, and a portion of the proceeds will go to St. Louis Children's Hospital from News Talk 1120 KMOX.